your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Good day, and welcome to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence, with Reiki Master and host, Phyllis Lee Forimoto, as she shares with you inspiring stories along with her practical wisdom for finding balance with spirit in everyday life. Now, here's your host, Phyllis Forimoto.
Hello, this is Phyllis Forimoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Hey, this is the beginning of a new theme for this program, and the last theme was about applying treatments in special situations, and the interviews have been fabulous, and I hope for you listeners, very inspirational, as well as informative about the deep underlying issues and lessons that are learned as we do hands-on treatment. Today, we're shifting the focus from treatment and the physical, more of the physical realm, to something that perhaps could be seen or felt as the opposite end of the spectrum, which for me means that there's a kind of duality, but there's a part of me that feels like it's just the other side of the coin, or the other part of being physical is this part of what I would call mysticism. And many people have talked to me about mysticism as it applies to Reiki, and some people are very adamant that Reiki is definitely a healing technique, and that mysticism and any kind of religious kind of overtones are not a part of this practice. And what happens for me when this when these conversations happen is that my mind could say that, but my experience seems to say differently. So I would like to start out this topic by having a conversation with two people from the UK who have, I think, paid attention to this part of their own practice, and also have their own backgrounds that really support an understanding of what do we mean by being a mystic, or by Reiki being a mystic order, or by the expression of experiencing, having a mystic experience. So I'd like to welcome Kristen Bonney and John Cass to the program today. Hello, are you there?
Hi.
Hello.
Yes, we're here.
Great. We don't have hand signals or anything, so they don't know when they're supposed to talk, I guess. The format of the show is going to be different today. We're going to do a conversation. So there'll be a segment of 26 minutes and then a commercial break and then another segment of 26 minutes, because when we get to talking, it's going to be difficult to wrap it up in 10 or 12 minutes. So we're just trying to lengthen the part of our conversation. So I'm really happy that they were able to join me today. And the first thing we're going to address is what I would call a kind of dictionary approach to looking at the definition of the word mystic. And Kristen has studied Greek in her university days. And perhaps, Kristen, you can share with us what you understand about this word mystic from its root origins.
Yes. Well, you haven't given me time to fumble for my Greek dictionary, but as far as I remember, the word mystic comes from a Greek word muo, I am silent. And this, for me, is a clue to the mystic experience in which we go beyond words. By definition, mystic experiences can't be verbalized. And from the little reading I've done in Christian and Eastern mystics, that seems to be the case, that they all say, you can't talk about it. You can talk around it, but you really have to experience it.
And John, do you have a feeling or an understanding of this word mystic and where it comes from?
I don't know the background of where it comes from, but that's interesting what Kristen has just said. For me, it's it is a person who, well, I guess a person who practices mysticism, which is a belief in a reality beyond our human comprehension, and that's where I agree. It's beyond words. It's also something you can't see, these mystical experiences, to my mind.
So a lot of the questions that I'm getting these days is, well, what is a mystic experience? And so so that's a very interesting place to go if we look at the root of the word, which means that there are no words.
I feel that when I explain to people what Reiki is, as best I can in words, you can say this is an energy that is flowing through me as a practitioner, being picked up by you, the person I'm treating, and your body will take the Reiki energy to where it's needed. So I can say that, but the actual getting one's head round what is actually happening, I have to experience, and that person has to experience, because I can't actually explain what is happening. It's a mystery to me.
Yes.
So although I say it, it's a mystery. And I do try and discuss that with people, because I honestly don't know.
Well, I do think that there is a desire among many Reiki practitioners to want to have a kind of definitive definition, if I may use that particular phrase. And in and of this being a very common experience that we can't really put words to the experience of receiving or giving Reiki, then I'm wondering if this then just sort of by definition, so to speak, places this practice into a mystic category.
Yes, I would say it does. And perhaps when we first come to Reiki, we think of it more as a healing technique. And after a time, just with the silence and the sitting, the length of the treatment, so just being in the presence of a large group of Reiki people, we've all experienced that stillness. And the mind just settles. I always think of it like, you know, that organic apple juice from the bottle. It looks all sort of clouded when you get it. And if you leave it sitting for a bit, it just settles to the bottom. And you get this lovely, clear, greenish liquid. And that's how my mind feels after a while of sitting, doing a treatment.
Yeah.
It just becomes still.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and for me, that stillness, I mean, yes, when I was first being taught Reiki, I came to it looking at it as a healing practice. But for me, the first moment of real mystery and stillness and silence was during my initiation.
Mm-hmm.
So But for me, the initiation is a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And the symbols are perhaps key, a form of key to the mystery. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah. Yes, because symbols, by definition, lead us into a realm beyond the verbal. Otherwise, we wouldn't need them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Well, I had always understood the word mystic, and we can use it either as an adjective, which describes an experience, like mystic experience or mystic order or mystic something, or we can use it as a noun, which is, you know, to say he or she is a mystic. And when I looked it up in the dictionary, it was a mystic experience was an experience that a human being had most usually spontaneously, that was an experience of oneness or the divine, or if in some cases people would call it God, without the intercession of another human being. So you could go directly from your own human awareness to another kind of awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, when I took that in as my own understanding of this word mystic, whether applied as a noun or an adjective, I felt like in the initiation, for instance, that's one of the first places that students may come into contact with this particular aspect of this practice and of being human. And so this is, you know, kind of another question. It's like some people say, well, you know, because you're a mystic, or, yeah, because you're a mystic, you tend to then make Reiki a mystic practice. And I say, well, actually, I feel like as in my human experience, I have mystical experiences without Reiki. And Reiki seems to just simply bring these forth more consciously. And I'm wondering what your experiences have been and how you feel about that.
Well, I think it's a doorway, and it's not the only doorway into this mystic experience.
Mm-hmm.
For me, there are other times and places where I've found that same experience of oneness that you talk about in nature, particularly sea and mountains, and somehow it's an entry into this soul feeling of oneness, union, forgetting my personal preferences and hang-ups, and just relaxing into being. And that's the same experience I get when I'm deeply into a Reiki treatment or in the initiation room. And I think of how many times students after the initiation will look with this wonder in their eyes and say, it's like coming home. Yeah.
And I think I agree with what Kristen has said, and I don't think it's just Reiki. I think Reiki is a doorway. But I mean, as you know, Phyllis, I'm really interested in sound and chanting, and the sound sort of transcends religions and mm-hmm. cultures and traditions. And when we chant together, there's a point, particularly at the end of the chant, and going back to what Kristen said, in the silence after the chant, when that sound is and vibration is being internalized, when people just, you can feel a connection in the room between people, and that stillness and feeling of although you're conscious, you're kind of touching something else.
Mm-hmm. Can you say that last part again?
I said, although there's a stillness in the room at the end of the chanting session, in that silence, and a feeling of connection to each other. And just a feeling of being somewhere else, even though you're actually conscious of where you are. There's a feeling that you're somewhere else and connected with what I believe is the divine and those other people within the room, all connected as well. Mm-hmm. So it's our own little, you talk about mystic order, it's maybe our own little mystic order within that chanting group that particular evening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With that commonality of purpose and intention.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, whenever I do this, but I think we've all experienced these toning circles that we've done within some of the Reiki community that is called Oz, and there's a place in which, you know, you tone or you say this, you sing, well, sing is a kind of very loose verb here, the Oz, and then afterwards, it's physically silent, but it's energetically or I don't know what the other word is, not silent. It's like I can hear the music continue.
Yeah.
And for me, that's a mystic experience.
Yeah, I agree. And I had, we had a really interesting experience, which I experienced in giving Reiki as well, around time. Recently, and the chanting experience was that we've been doing a session, and I was thinking we must be about 10 minutes through the end of this session now, which would have meant it would have been 10 to 9. And I looked at my watch, and it said 25 to 9. So I thought, oh, I've got longer than I thought. So we did a chant, and I looked at my watch at the end of the chant, which went on for about 6 or 7 minutes, and my watch said 25 to 9. It hadn't changed. And I thought to myself, well, I thought it was nearer to 10 to 9, so obviously my watch has stopped. So I crept across. Everybody looked at me a bit strangely because I walked across to the clock on the wall. The clock on the wall said 25 to 9. And I came back and I said, I'm sorry, but I'm a bit confused and surprised. And I explained what had happened. And another lady in the group stood next to Annette, said, well, that's strange. For some reason, we looked at our watch when we started that chant, and it said 25 to 9. So that is, for me, a real mystery. And I find that this happens with Reiki treatments, that you can hold a position and say, right, I'm going to hold this position for about 5 minutes. And sometimes I look at the clock, and I feel it has not shifted. And other times it's flown by. Mm. And that, for me, is a mystery.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's kind of like I'm being held, or the person I'm treating is being held, in this particular state for a particular period of time.
Yes, and that is one of the definitions of a mystic experience, that time and space are irrelevant, reminding us that actually they're sort of temporary agreements, but it's not who we really are.
Yeah.
You think of the distant treatment that we do, you know, and it's just as effective treating someone in Australia as in our own living room.
Yes.
Yes.
So this word mystery has come up a lot in our few minutes of discussion, and I'm just wondering if you see a relationship that's, well, of course, mystery has something to do with it, and they kind of sound alike, mystic and mystery. But, you know, I think that there are people, and it seems like that for me, that mystic, there is more toward, it could be a fantasy rather than, it could be just my fantasy, which means that it doesn't exist. Which is not true for me, but this is how they're, you know, relating to it. But a mystery is something to be solved. And I'm just It's an interesting juxtaposition because, you know, our colloquial usage of words is so fascinating for me. When we get into this place of trying to speak about the unspeakable.
Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking about the other use of the word mystery, as in murder mystery. And it's something that's unsolved.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. Yes, I suppose in a murder mystery it does get solved at the end, but the whole thing is about the questioning, you know, the excitement of reading the story is that you're constantly questioning and looking for solutions.
Yeah, and I think, yeah. I guess the question is whether you... Maybe for me, I think everybody has the capability, everybody, all and sundry, of being a mystic or of having mystic experiences. I think everybody is capable of that. There's then a question of, do they then go on and question why or actually actively pursue looking to find the truth of this, let's use the word mystery. Now, for me, that probably is what you would class a mystic as. If somebody actually says their role is a mystic, then that mystic is, to my mind, looking to seek the truth about themselves, about other people's, and about that bridge, if you like, to the unseen realm that we talk about. Mm-hmm. They really are seeking that. They're seeking to find the answer to this mystery. That's their role as a mystic.
Mm-hmm.
The paradox being, that they can't find it through the means that they're searching, through books, through study, through words, through thoughts.
Yeah.
Because what all mystics agree about is that the mind has to stop.
Yeah.
Just stop. And there are so many stories of people reaching the very elevated state of mystic experience just by stopping the mind. And that's what all practices seem to be doing, don't they?
The
chanting and the...
And the meditation.
Meditation and so on, the prayer.
Yeah.
I had caused, because I used the Wicca, what is this called? Wikipedia on the internet, a lot of my dictionary definitions, because I find them quite amusing.
Right.
And there's this one beautiful passage that is a mystical teaching from... I hope I pronounced this person's name right. Yunus Emiri. And the poem is, or the teaching is, I climbed into the plum tree and ate the grapes I found there. The owner of the garden called to me, "Why are you eating my walnuts?" And it says that this is a parable, a poem, a koan, and is humorous all at once, and describes the human potential for timelessness and moving beyond perception. And a fantastic example of often what I feel like in a Reiki treatment, that why is the movement of the body, or it seems to be on a physical level this, when I expected it to be that? And why then do we call it healing when it's not really what we expected, and yet in the long run, it's obviously what was needed? And it's an amazing place to just, for me, step back and look at, quote, what we're really doing. And that's kind of humorous in and of itself, because, you know, there's so many different levels that we can answer this question on, which makes it become a kind of koan, you know, like, what are we really doing? And to imagine that we as human beings could answer the question with thoroughness seems a little bit assumptive. And the more that I get into Reiki, the more that I feel this. I don't know if you're following what I'm saying. But the assumption that I can answer the question, what are we really doing when we lay our hands on people and channel Reiki, is something that I find less and less able to answer.
Yeah, I agree.
No logic to it. It's very fascinating talking to, I was just talking to a group, and they say, well, you know, we want to write a little brochure to explain to people what Reiki is, because we found it really difficult to tell people what we're doing. And that's such a common experience, you know, because there's no logic to it.
No.
And everybody wants to know, well, what's going to happen to me in a treatment, you know? Well, I don't know. No idea.
And it's so different for everybody.
Right. Right. So enter the mystery once again.
Yes. And there's humor there, too, because we have to go beyond the logic, you know, and it's often quite amusing where the Reiki takes people. Quite unexpected directions.
Right. Exactly. Well, it's a good place to take a little break now, and we'll ponder this mystery and our own experiences for all you listeners out there, your own experience of the mystery and perhaps the mystic. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
Be extraordinary. Seventh Wave Network.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The law of attraction is very much in today's public awareness. In reality, it is not a new concept. Join Liana Carbone for Living Wisdom, the Art of Shamanism and Spirituality. Discover the roots of the law of attraction and go beyond its theories to manifest a life of balance and prosperity. Living Wisdom can be heard each Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Seventh Wave Network. Come join us to dream, learn, and heal.
Hey, how you doing? Educational videos, top quality, right here.
You'll never hear anyone selling education on the street. But with free family learning programs, you can get the education you need. Call 1-877-FAMLIT1 for information on free learning programs. 1-877-FAMLIT1.
Check it out. You want your GED right here, guaranteed, ma. Come on, check it out.
Free family learning programs from the National Center for Family Literacy. Brought to you by the National Center for Family Literacy and the Ad Council.
Your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. And I have with me Kristen Bonney and John Cass, who both actually live in Wales. sorry, my mind is a little bit behind time. John moved there, I think, a year ago now, huh, John? Or it has been since January. Seems like years, maybe.
Yeah, it does.
Anyway.
It's a great place to be there.
I'm really thrilled that they could be with us because we've had these discussions about mystery and mystic experience within Reiki, and I have put out a kind of a definition of the system, but more, this is an aspect of, this is one of four aspects of this, what I feel is the essence of Reiki, of a Reiki practice, which is mystic order, is one of four of these aspects. And many people are intrigued by this particular aspect because it goes beyond the physical. And I think that, if I may just grossly generalize, that as human beings, especially human beings on the planet today, we are searching, it seems, for another kind of connection to what we in the old days, I will use this for myself, in the old days called God. And now we've used other words that could be spirit or the divine or divinity or the goddess or, you know, there are all these different words that we use for what I would call universal life energy, Reiki. And in this practice, we, from the very moment of initiation and the very beginning of putting our hands on someone else, I feel we enter into a relationship with a part of ourselves that is often unknown up until that time consciously, which is the part of us that is mystery. And then recently, I think a lot of students have delved into this part that is mystery for them and really want to have something that will give them guidance and nurturance into what I would call mystic experience. So my question is, and this is true for a lot of people, is that there is sometimes this question around religion and whether does you feel that one has to practice or have religious background in order to be a mystic?
And I think not, going back to what I was saying earlier, because I believe that Reiki itself transcends belief systems, religious or otherwise, and that as such, anybody is capable of having that mystic experience.
Mm-hmm. And could I add to that? They are capable of having this mystic experience because it is a part of our beingness, or our, it's inherent in being human.
Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah,
I think for a lot of people. Well, think of children. I feel that perhaps, you know, young children live permanently in this state of oneness. If you look into the eyes of a very small child, you know, they've never heard of religion. They don't have any practice, but they come from that place of just knowing and oneness and innocence and acceptance with no mind. No religion needed for that. So maybe it's just another, you know, the religious practice can be an access into the mystical for sure, as we can see from all the, you know, biographies we could read of mystics, but it's not the only way.
Well, I find it fascinating that the religions that I know of anyway have a part of their community sort of labeled as the mystics.
Mm.
You know, like, so for instance, For instance, in Judaism, it's the Kabbalah, and the people who study the Kabbalah are they're mystics. And for Islam, it's the Sufis, and so on. So it's just a very fascinating process that in these religious communities, there is a kind of mystical branch that emerges. And
which is quite often disapproved of by the more orthodox branch, because it bypasses the need for a priest or a church.
Mm-hmm. Which in and of itself is heresy.
Yes, yeah.
So it's a kind of double bind situation, seems like. You know, where it seems like, you know, people go into a religion to find this connection to God or to spirit or the divine. And once they find it and they can experience it for their own, then they either are accepted as a mystical branch or not accepted at all. And it's an interesting process. And I wonder how much of that confusion is also is brought into the Reiki community just because, you know, we're human and we've had this organized religious background for so many generations.
I don't know. I was thinking about what you said about the mystical branch of religions, and I don't personally believe that that's the only, you know, that you have to be a Sufi or a Kabbalist or labeled as a Christian mystic to reach a mystic experience. It can happen straight through the religious route, and that is some people's way. Because if you think of the components of most religious practices, there would be a practice of prayer, perhaps of song or chant, of perhaps meditation, and of surrender to your order if you're a monk. So there's a spiritual discipline in that sense, and for many people that is actually the route through to the divine.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's an either or.
So I feel that one of the things that comes up for some people is that if, so this is the kind of logic that I've heard sometimes, if Reiki is has as one of its components, you know, an introduction into the mystery, or that we might become mystics, then it must be a religion. And it's very interesting to just go back to a kind of definition of religion, which I don't want to get into, which has within it this very confusing question about, you know, the role of mysticism in our established religions as we know them today. So it's an interesting thought that I've pondered on a lot, and I just wanted to introduce it today because I feel that it sometimes it underlies some of our assumptions about how unusual having a mystic experience is.
How unusual.
Yes. I mean, you know, that some people feel that it's very unusual. And so because it's unusual, there's something that's really inherently scary about practicing Reiki, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I don't feel that, as you say, some people could argue that Reiki must be a religion. I think that because of the mystic element, I think you could say that Reiki could result in somebody having what might be termed as a religious experience. But not necessarily it being a religion. Subtle difference. And I mean, I have had an experience, if you'd like to hear, as a result of Reiki. I've had one or two experiences which I could never have imagined in the past. Which for me, the first time was following my first degree initiation, when I was treating myself one night, and I sort of went into, I guess, what I describe as Reiki space. I wasn't awake, I wasn't deeply asleep, I was just somewhere in Reiki. And I felt as if my body turned from head to toe, and I lifted up, and I came down, and I landed on the ground, and then I came back onto the bed. And there was a genuine feeling of just movement and shift. And I had that then, and it was a very, very strange experience. And subsequently, I've had two or three instances where I had been treating myself, and I suddenly felt a tingling and a feeling. You could possibly describe it as an out-of-body experience, I'm not sure, but a feeling of whooshing off around the room. And when you talked about frightening, actually, I define that frightening, and I can remember shouting out, "Stop! Stop! I don't want this to happen!" because it was very scary. But I was in control still. Because it did stop, and that was fine. And I kind of just came back to Earth, or to this reality, rather than some other sphere or realm or reality. I was definitely off somewhere else, and I could feel myself going somewhere else, and I was just scared about where I was going. And I had it, following that, I had another instance where I kind of felt that it was weird, because I felt that I wanted to have that experience again, because I just felt that I was getting closer to this truth somehow, and that I'd stopped something that I should have explored further. So I kind of was endeavoring to feel like I want to have this treatment again. And I had a similar experience, but it was very short, and it was like it felt as if I went off into this tingling movement, and then felt as if my arms were held above me, and I was just lowered, really physically lowered by whatever was holding me, back onto the bed so gently, as if to say, "There you are, it's fine."
Wow.
And they're just amazing things, which, you know, that was a few years ago now, and I've not had an experience since, but it's just amazing.
Well, it sort of relates to what you were saying earlier, Phyllis, about people thinking that they don't, I forget what you said exactly, that they don't have mystical experiences, as though there's some kind of block, you know, and John was saying the fear. You start out on this journey, and then the fear hits because it's too strange and it's too weird, and you come back into normal consciousness. So I feel that many of us would have many more of these experiences if we just allowed them to be normal and let go of the fear, because they're too unusual.
Exactly. Well, it's interesting for me that though we've talked about the very basic experience of initiation or hands-on treatment being a possible, well, for us, we call it a mystic experience. And so even just trying to define Reiki or Reiki practice is a mystic experience, because we can't do it and there's no words to really describe it. We come to a place of then what is the goal? And for me, the goal in all of our endeavors is to prepare ourselves for lengthening these kinds of experiences and actually consciously creating the space in which to have them, which, you know, really is different from just a spontaneous happening. So my question to you, John, is do you feel like now that you've had these two experiences, could it be that there are similar experiences that you've had, but because they're not so surprising, they don't get your attention so much?
It's possible.
So maybe they've become a bit more commonplace.
It's possible, but I think I don't think of the same nature. I think sometimes I go into a space and the thing I was talking about, as I say, was a feeling of really significant movement, that was happening, and a different level of vibration that was happening to me. So that was one clear experience. But I think there are other experiences. I don't know whether it's still mystic or not. It's more of a sort of a Reiki space, but more of a sort of dream type experience.
Which
is not so much the movement, it's kind of being in something. And that maybe I don't acknowledge as much because it's a bit like a dream. But I actually think it's a bit different to a dream. If that makes any sense.
Well, yes, I think so. I mean, I store it away in my understanding as, you know, there are these unusual experiences. Maybe we could call them transcendent experiences, truly transcendent experience, in that there is no way for us to hold on to our known experience while having these other experiences. So they transcend everything we know and give us a totally new experience of who we are as human beings.
Because they're beyond the mind.
I think of
the experience of being in a large group of Reiki people doing treatments, particularly when we're doing the hand positions in sync, as you've been experimenting with lately. And that is an extraordinary feeling. You know, I've had a taste through that of what you call mystic order, I think, of this sense of oneness in a fairly large group of people all working within a rhythm. And the personalities disappear, the names disappear, but the awareness of the room and of the people doesn't disappear. But I suppose it's sort of love, like when you have someone on the table and you don't even know them, but you feel this sense of oneness and acceptance and knowing that there really isn't any difference between you on a certain level.
Yeah.
Very beautiful.
Yeah. I can relate to that.
Well, I have a feeling that our time is nearly at an end. And it's been a great conversation. Thank you very much, both of you. And Kristen, your last words
are
very beautiful and puts me into this place of wanting to re-look at my practice again. And, you know, as I go through my daily life to see, well, how many of these experiences would I have 10 years ago felt them to be unusual? So it's an interesting place where I think in a Reiki practice, we so soon forget the before Reiki experiences and assume that the Reiki experience, the experiences we're having in our lifetime now, are the same as what we had before. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
So the extraordinary becomes the ordinary.
Yes.
Yes.
And within that, we tend to disallow the effect that the practice has had on our lives sometimes. Yes. You know, and wondering, well, how can I put my finger on how does Reiki work? And sometimes the how does Reiki work is evident only to the people outside of you. Well, it's been a wonderful discussion, and I don't know, do either of you have any last words of sharing you'd like to impart?
Well, I've enjoyed the conversation, and I think it's encouraged me to just keep going, because, as you say, it's a slow process. It's a gentle process, and just to keep practicing.
And I have to say that having this three-way conversation here with occasional silences has felt a bit like a mystic experience at times, in terms of a feeling of connection. You know, I actually feel close to you.
Oh, great. Wonderful.
Mystic order in action.
Yes. Yeah. It feels that way.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if our listeners feel that way.
Yeah.
Those of you who are listening to this program feel a part of it and can identify with some of the experiences that we've shared, and also that you have maybe more encouragement to surrender to that place of Reiki where it might be a little scary or a little unusual and you don't know really what's going to happen, and to allow yourself just to surrender to that place and see what does happen. One of the things that my grandmother used to say to her first-degree students was, well, apply Reiki and see what happens. And, you know, that was a very matter-of-fact, down-to-earth kind of thing to say. But I have, in putting that to work in my own practice life, I realized that I've gotten into some pretty unusual circumstances, and it's brought me into definitely very different realms of being human than I had ever been conscious of before. So this place of mysticism and mystic experience in Reiki feels like it's a part of who we are as human beings, and we bring that in we bring ourselves into a practice that really oh dear, I'm without words. That really encourages.
Well, you just turned into a mystic, you see.
Right. That really, I wish I had a great poem. That really encourages that kind of experience. So, well, thank you very much, John and Kristen.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. You're welcome.
Thank you.
And I'll be looking forward to hearing some feedback from some of you out there listening about your mystic experiences in Reiki. And we'll be back next week. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's episode of Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Be sure to tune in every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the 7th Wave Network, and discover how you can find balance from within.